Thank you. Thank you both, Lauren and Barb. We'll move on to the question and answer session now and go through the questions posted online. And then we probably will have time to open the phone lines as well. I think most of the questions, or all of them I've seen right now, are for Lauren, so we'll start with those, but everybody please continue typing in your questions. The first question is it anticipated that the Marine Highway Program will be funded at the level of, or even in the same manner as the federal highway programs?
Chuck, that's a real dream. No, it's not anticipated. It's a hope. I'm speechless. I don't know what to say. I wish that would happen. There's so much that could be done with it. All we had for funding so far was the $7 million grant in fiscal 2010. And as I said before, there's nothing else on the books at this time. Well, there's other programs. Thank you. Tony First is in the room and he's made a suggestion. They're eligible for CMAQ funding. If there are other infrastructure grant programs coming out in the future, such as there was Tiger last year, it's eligible for those programs. There's EPA grants that we found to help with engine, overhaul and replacement. So we're trying to search all the federal programs to see what our program applies for and help projects apply for those other programs. We've even seen some economic development grants for infrastructure. So we're trying to pass those words out. But a specific Marine Highway Program does not have funding at this time.
Okay. The next question is, one of the three projects that received a grant award has gone out of business, and that's the M10. What will happen to those funds?
Okay. That's a real good question, Jim. And there's a misconception about that. None of the grants were awarded to private companies. All the Marine Highway grants went to public entities, and this last year they all in fact went to port authorities. The Marine Highway grant in the Gulf went to the port authorities of Brownsville, Texas and Manatee, Florida. Those ports came to us as soon as they found out the service was going to terminate its business. Unfortunately, and this is not anything private, this was in the media, it's on the internet, the company was undercapitalized and they just couldn't keep going. The two ports came to us and they presented us with a plan for moving forward, and we're giving them some time to adopt that plan. And I believe an RFP will be going out attracting a new service, and we know for a fact that they have been contacted already by 10 different U.S. flag Jones Act qualifying carriers. So we're looking forward to them coming forward. They have a time frame to meet to get a new service in place and to meet the spirit of the grant, which is to expand the service. So they have to expand what was there before. They can't just start a new one and get funds. If the funds are not met, if the criteria for the funds is not met, those funds go back to the General Treasury. Next question.
Okay, the next question, there's two parts. The first is, do you have estimates on how many passengers could be added in the next few years?
No, I don't. And unfortunately, the majority of questions we get, majority of interest, is on the freight side. And there's actually four passenger projects around the country I can think of. And they range from moving less than 100 people at a time to over 300 people at a time with multiple services a day. So we haven't even tried to calculate those numbers.
And then the next part is there a high-speed ferry or ship that could take the place or add another option to high-speed rail?
Yes, there is. It would just have to be in the right region of the country. It would have to have the right passenger count in order to cover the operating costs.
Okay. Has the Houston Gateway office been staffed?
No, it hasn't, Jim, and I understand that the job will be posted on usajobs.com in the near future.
Okay. The next question is, it just says new project designation call for 2010.
Yes, Mark, there's going to be a new project designation call. We don't have the date yet. It's going to be this summer, and it will be in the Federal Register. And Mark Young, you are already on our list of people to notify when it comes out.
Could you talk more about the Upper Missouri Gateway? Can you see a more active role for states such as Wyoming?
The Upper Missouri Gateway, unfortunately, that office, there's an opening. How do I say it? This is so sad. The gentleman who was our gateway director passed away just before Christmas. and that job will be posted on usajobs.com in the near future. It'll probably be posted at the same time as the Houston opening. States, you know, Wyoming has not been on my radar screen, but now I'm going to go back to my office and look at it. And if you have ideas, please send me an email to lauren.brand@dot.gov and let's talk about it.
Can you expand on the Missouri River study?
I see, Greg, that you're with Hanson Professional Services, which is providing the support to the Missouri DOT for the inventorying of their assets on the water, and for some other things. And we already have a connection with your firm, and we've got them down as technical subject matter experts on our list of people we're putting together to work with. So the study will have an RFP, and I don't want to give you any other information at this time because it'll give you an unfair advantage in answering an RFP.
Okay. This, I think, is just a comment. EPA's clean diesel grant program, most of which is competed on a regional basis and can underwrite cost of engine replacement, repower, and retrofit. And thank you to Abby for posting the link there. You made reference to three meetings, East, West, and Intermodal. You said that two had already been held. Can you provide a link to meeting announcements or notes?
Sarah, I apologize if I gave you some misinformation. I've confused two things there. The three corridor workshops have not yet been held. They're being organized and planned at this time, and we will be announcing when they will take place. The two meetings that had already been held are roundtables. One was held over a year ago in Charleston, and I'm trying to think where the other one was off the top of my head, but there's one being planned right now for Brownsville, Texas, and we're talking about doing one in Detroit. So they're two different animals. And we will try to put those on our website. We're having trouble updating our website on a timely basis, but we'll get that out to Carol and try to get it distributed.
Right. Lauren, we can add them as calendar items on our website as well for you.
Oh, that'd be great. I didn't know I could do that.
Mm-hmm. Right. If people go there and check, we'll get them posted for you.
Excellent. Thank you.
Could you talk more about the proposed border area short sea shipping projects?
Oh, Debbie, can you type a little more? What do you want to know? And I'll be happy to talk about it because I could talk for another hour about those.
Okay. Well, we'll move on. Debbie, if you want to type more, we can open the phone lines in a minute, too.
She's typing away. This is great.
Going back to the question about the Missouri River study, I guess...
Greg, it's not a continuation of your study. Your study is for the state, and we're doing a federal study for Congress. They're different.
Okay. I see Debbie might be adding more to her question there. In the meantime, what we'll also do is, if the operator can give instructions on how to ask questions over the phone, we'll see if anybody has any questions on the phone lines. Nicole, are you available? Is the operator on the line?
At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. There are no questions from the phone line.
Okay, well, we'll wait a minute. It looks like we have a few people typing in some questions, so we'll just give them a minute to get the questions in, and at the same time, if anybody wants to ask one over the phone, we'll, you know, take it there as well. Let's see. Here's another question. For the benefits calculator, have you asked your contractor consultant to work with EPA's Office of Transportation and Air Quality?
No, we've gotten data from them, but they're not working directly with them.
Okay. And here's a clarification of the previous question. About the short sea shipping programs, what specific crossings, what is the available waterside infrastructure, and would this be mainly containerized cargo? Any introduction you could provide?
Oh, Debbie, thank you for typing additional information. What we're looking at, as I said before, are congested border crossings that could be supplemented with short sea services. So we're looking at the Gulf of Mexico, specifically the Texas-Mexico border, perhaps something that might go between Veracruz or Tuxpan, Mexico, to any of the U.S. ports in the Gulf. We're looking at the Great Lakes and the St. Lawrence Seaway. The Ambassador Bridge is, I think, the most congested border crossing between the U.S. and Canada. So, and there's a hazmat truck ferry right now that operates, but there's not a passenger service. So we're looking at the possibility of supporting the efforts of the Detroit Wayne County Port Authority and their counterpart in, at the Port of Windsor to develop a passenger ferry. And as I said before, that's one that has received a ferry discretionary grant program from Federal Highway. They've identified some customers that live in Canada, like 6,000 passengers that live in Canada and actually work on the U.S. side and commute back and forth every single day. If we could take that many cars off, that would be fantastic. And why we're addressing it with this short C group is we're talking to Transport Canada and saying, let's make sure that the infrastructure on both sides of the border is capable of handling the flow of, you know, the new traffic pattern that would result from this. So if you've got 6,000 passengers, you want to make sure they aren't going through a two-road residential area to park the car on Park Lawn to get to the waterfront. You want to make sure that the everything's adequate. The road meets a parking lot that's adequate in the proper part of the city next to the port that has the facilities. We're also looking at San Diego in Southern California and the border crossing there with Mexico, and I can't remember the name of the port in Mexico, but the northernmost port there has an interest in doing a passenger and freight service, and we've met with the community of San Diego, and we'll be working with the government of Canada to get the two parties together and see if there's some interest in developing a service there for that congested border crossing. So those are the types of things we're looking at.
Okay. Do you anticipate that the short sea services will be self-sustaining financially?
They have to be in the long run. If they aren't self-sustaining, if the market can't support them, then they just won't continue. It works in a lot of parts of the world. We believe that it's going to need some assistance in terms of funding and other non-funding support to get pilot projects off, because you are changing the trade patterns. But the market really has to show that this will be self-sustaining in the long run. And you know, some people in the room have heard me say this before, maybe some on the phone have heard me say it. My dad was one of the first truckers to put a truck on a rail car. Back when he did that, when I was a little kid, it was pretty unique. And he was kind of laughed at for doing it. But now that's normal way to ship things. So I really don't see where we can't make this work. As a nation, if we look at the public benefits provided by including marine highway as an option for surface transportation and including it in intermodal planning where it makes sense, then it will become sustainable.
What is the status of the California Marine Highway Tiger Project?
Oh, that's really exciting. They are putting out the bid for their cranes, and they've already put out the bid. Oh, no, they're developing the bid package for their barge, so they're really moving forward with it. I'm excited about that one. And that's, for those of you who don't know, that is where three ports who used to compete with each other actually got together and said, we are in one region, and this is what we do, and if we work together, we could start a service between the ports of Stockton, Oakland, and West Sacramento, California. And they identified the freight that's moving in that region. They identified the public benefits that would result from adding a marine highway service to the intermodal mix there. And they're working together now instead of against each other.
What role do you see for the MPOs along the various coasts?
Oh, Ted, that's a great question. And I've really gotten a lot of education from Barb and some of the other MPOs that I've started working with this last year. And the MPOs, first, you know, I'm asking, are you doing freight and passenger transportation planning on an intermodal basis? Or are you working in a modal silo? And we're asking that you're looking at your region as a system, which majority of the MPOs are doing. And if the MPOs don't buy into this process isn't going to work. Because without that system planning for the region, the connections can't be made on the intermodal services. So to me, you've got one of the key roles. You have a seat at every table for every meeting that I go to in a region.
And Barb, maybe we'll put it out to you as well if you want to, you know, expand on that, talk a little bit more about your role.
Well, in Virginia, our MPO in Richmond is working closely with the Hampton Roads GPO, which includes their MPO, as well as with our MPO to the north, looking at the freight flows, you know, within our micro region, you know, which is, as we all know, freight moves at a much larger regional scale than MPO region, but we are looking closely at the dynamics of the movement of freight within and between the various MPOs. Actually, there's a fourth MPO, Tri-Cities, to the south, where we are looking at making sure we program the transportation improvement in a timely manner to meet the needs to support freight movement in Virginia. And we try and coordinate with our state DOT. I think they're doing a good job of reaching out to the MPOs and trying to encourage more MPO engagement in the freight movement area. And I think that at the MPO level, that's where the implementation, perhaps, of some of these programs will occur, that you can have perhaps great visions, but the actual implementation where it's going to take place on the ground is going to perhaps be at the MPO level, and coordination between MPOs, I think, will be very important in the future.
Thank you.
I've got a question for Barb. Could you get us a copy of the income tax credit legislation so we can take a look at it? Because I'm curious to see how that gets applied, how the shippers receive it, and how they apply for it,
yes,
and how they document that they actually move the goods by water as opposed to any other mode.
I will. I'll be glad to send the information to you, Tony, as well as to Jennifer, so that it can be embedded in the link for the webcast.
Thank you. Well, I don't see any other questions typed in at the moment, so I guess we'll go ahead and close out for the day, although while I'm reading these last few remarks, if you think of something else, feel free to type it in. But I want to thank you, Lauren and Barb, for great presentations. I think we had a lot of good questions that really showed people's interest in the topic. As I mentioned before, the recording of today's event will be available online within the next few weeks, and I'll send out an email once it becomes available. As a reminder, if you're an AICP member and want to receive 1.5 certification maintenance credits for today, this seminar is not yet available on the AICP website for logging credits, but I will send out a notice to everybody once it does become available. I encourage everyone to download the evaluation form from the file share box in the bottom right and send it to me. We're always looking for feedback on the seminar so we can make them as good as possible for you, and also topic ideas for topics. The next seminar will be held on April 20th and will be about the scan on national and international freight corridor programs. The seminar is not yet open for registration, but I'll send out a notice through the Freight Planning Listserv once it is. For those of you who aren't currently members, the Freight Planning Listserv is our primary means of sending out announcements about Talking Freight, but is also used just to share freight knowledge in general. So I encourage you to join it if you haven't already done so. So with that, thank you everybody, and enjoy the rest of your day.